Get the knives out. Dish is about to be served. Outrageous. Are you kidding? I've been inside only one woman after I was born. The Statue of Liberty.
Provocative.
If it's a pain in the ass, honey, you're not doing it right.
Pop culture.
Meanwhile, she's on the cover of Us Weekly.
Dating.
Boyfriends are like jobs, except he probably stopped sucking after a year.
Wicked.
What do I look for in a guy? My dick.
Smart. Sassy. Contemporary.
I mean, I can't.
Porn Again. The podcast.
Hi, everyone. It's Josh Sabara. Welcome to Porn Again, the podcast. We're having a sort of a G-rated edition today because my guest is my dear friend, Danielle Page, who is a New York Times bestselling author. She has cornered the young adult market with her fairy tale reimaginings, including Dorothy Must Die, which is so good, and everybody needs to get that book. The Wicked Will Rise and hot off the presses, Yellow Brick War. And her next book, Stealing Snow, a retelling of the Snow Queen, will be on shelves in September. Hi, Danielle.
Hi, Josh. I'm so excited to be here.
I know. It seems like this is such a formal setting for us.
It does. I feel like we should be sitting at a bar.
Yeah, we should. That's why we have our Starbucks
yes.
for now. Mm-hmm. I'm not even a coffee drinker, but this is basically a milkshake.
I'm a big fan of frappuccinos. I'm having a cappuccino right now just to save on the sugar, but that looks amazing.
Okay, I'm just going to keep...
You keep ingesting.
I'm just going to keep eating it. Okay, so before... I mean, I know you've heard the podcast before, but before I we start talking about your writing career, I usually cover a few hot topics, things that are irritating to me that week or whatever.
I love it.
Yeah, you know.
Do I get to weigh in or am I just...
Of course.
Okay.
You know how much I love to bitch. And the more someone disagrees with me, the more fun it gets.
Let's see if I can disagree with you.
So this is just really a little factoid I'm throwing out there.
Okay.
So apparently Transformers and Ninja Turtles actress Megan Fox, you know, who's so sexy. I mean, I'm not even interested
she's
in women
gorgeous.
And she's sexy. I know.
I'm also not interested in women and I think she's gorgeous.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, she's pregnant again for the third time. And she has filed for divorce from her husband, Brian Austin Green of 90210.
I was going to say of 90210.
Right. So word on the street is that they've stayed close since filing for divorce.
Then,
so I'm wondering how close you think, how close they may have stayed.
I think very close.
It sounds that way.
Yeah. Are they still divorcing?
Apparently they're going ahead with the divorce is what I hear.
Okay.
So she hasn't rescinded the paperwork.
Okay. Well, maybe.
So I don't know. Maybe there's hope.
Or not.
But don't you think that's such an interesting thing? Like you're getting divorced, but you're having a third child together?
Yeah, I feel like you should put the paperwork on hold and just make sure. But I guess
I don't know.
So yeah.
I don't know. What can I say?
Then, did she like do a press release? Like how do we know this?
I don't know. It's just sort of word on the street, Danielle.
Okay. I'm sorry.
You forget what town you're in.
Yes, I'm from New York.
The streets here breathe different things.
Yeah.
Another thing is, and I know people are going to come after me because every single episode I wind up talking about Rita Wilson, Tom Hanks' wife.
Yes, what about her?
Because she has a second album out.
I never heard the first album.
Well,
I missed it.
Nor should anyone.
Okay.
Okay. But then I found out today, so it goes further. Like she's been on every talk show. She's been in People Magazine, whatever. And now she's going to be opening for Chicago, the band Chicago on tour.
I really didn't know she sang, so.
Well, and I think it's really smart on Chicago's part because at least you know people are going to love what they're hearing once you hit the stage.
Yeah, but
you kind of warm them up with something that's not great.
So you've actually
and then you
heard
sound
her,
great.
You've actually heard her sing, so she's not great.
I have heard
okay.
it.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Basically, she's Tom Hanks' wife.
Wow. So she never like started out in music or anything?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I have no idea. It just makes me laugh for some reason. Like the latest Rita Wilson album.
Yes.
Really?
I didn't know there was a first one. Yeah. I'm so totally mm-hmm. catching up here.
Yeah. Okay. So then another thing that's funny today. There's a reason that I want you to weigh in on this. Because you work in the young adult space and you are in sort of the teen market. So One Directioner. The former One Directioner, Zayn Malik.
Which one?
Zayn.
Okay.
Who has a new album out. He's supposedly engaged to Gigi Hadid.
She's so pretty.
Right?
Yeah.
So he's 23. She's 20. And apparently they've been dating for 4 months.
Wow. Yes.
So what I want to know is, are young people moving too fast? I mean, Lindsay Lohan is apparently engaged and after dating a 22-year-old for 5 months.
I think it's
so. What
little...
is it with these young people? What is it that's? I mean, what? Why the speed?
Do you think it's a Hollywood thing, or do you think it's a?
I'm asking you. You know that you're in these people's heads more than I am.
I don't know. I think that if for everyone, there's like that wave of people that get married early. So maybe this is just the same thing. Like when I first graduated high school, I had a couple of friends that got married.
Are they still married?
Not the high school ones, but the college one. Actually, one couple is. And then right after college, there's always like at least two weddings maybe. So maybe they're just part of that wave. And sometimes those couples stick and sometimes they don't. There is such thing as childhood sweethearts that work. I believe in getting out there and experimenting a little bit more before you choose somebody for life.
I think it's good to experiment till at least 45.
I'm thinking I'm on that plan myself. So maybe the wrong girl to talk to,
it seem quick? I mean, to be with somebody for 3 or 4 months. I mean, I don't even know if I want somebody, you know, folding my t-shirts after that long.
I know.
I need more time with
them. I feel like I'd need at least a year before I could consider that, and probably longer. But I mean, they are younger and your brain's not completely developed. Maybe that's it. I don't know.
I mean, that's a good theory.
Yeah.
So now on another, just switching courses a little bit. So a number of musicians, authors, and celebrities are staying out of North Carolina because of their recent transgender unfriendly law. So not to mention Mississippi's religious liberty law. And then there are some similar happenings in Tennessee. So Bruce Springsteen canceled a show. Bryan Adams canceled a show. Now Miley Cyrus is in the mix. Jimmy Buffett sort of came down hard on North Carolina. I don't think he canceled the shows yet, but he was very stern in his statement. And then a bunch of authors who are Mississippi or from Mississippi, John Grisham, Catherine Stockett, who wrote The Help, and Donna Tartt, among others, have signed a letter demanding that the law be repealed. Do you think that things like this, and I know that you were involved in a letter from Publishers Weekly last week about North Carolina.
Yeah,
a bunch of
YA authors. We signed a letter and we put an ad in Publishers Weekly last week. And it was spearheaded by Margie Stoll, who wrote Beautiful Creatures. And there are, I think, about 200 of us that signed. And so I obviously am on board with signing anything that would help get us out of this mess. I think it helps to like put our money where our mouth is. Like, for people to cancel concerts, it hurts the economy. It tells them that this is not okay. In Georgia, where I'm from, a bunch of companies said that they would pull out of their business there. Film companies did that, and like The Walking Dead,
right.
and the governor vetoed the law, so it didn't happen in Georgia because people spoke with their bucks.
So we're seeing results from that.
Yeah, so I think it worked in Georgia. I feel like I can't remember what company in North Carolina just pulled out of putting jobs there. So,
well, PayPal was involved.
So I feel like if it has an economic consequence, or even then maybe lawmakers will listen because
I'm on the side of the artists. I agree with what the artists are doing to make the statement, because I think it's necessary. Whatever we need to do to fix this, but there's also the other side that says, look, not everybody in these states feels that way. And we've been loyal fans and we've been buying your books and we've been buying your albums and we pay to see you. And we don't agree with, you know, this legal decision. And now we don't have the opportunity to see you. And so they're upset as fans. So do you think there's any way to...
I know an author who had an event in North Carolina who decided he would go there and actually speak about it at his event. But I also know that people feel that if there's no consequence if nothing actually happens and you're just talking about it, then probably the lawmakers aren't going to listen. I think that
so it's like the good have to suffer with the bad, unfortunately,
Yeah, I think so. And I think that if I were a kid in North Carolina and I agreed with the artists, then I would feel like, well, maybe I need to travel to a different place to actually
see them.
I think it's really hard if maybe you just bought tickets to your favorite artist and you're going to miss them. But hopefully this will get resolved, or hopefully you can go see them somewhere else. But
I mean, I would even skip seeing Dolly Parton in North Carolina if I had to.
Yeah, like
I feel
that strongly about it. And I think that kids, when they really... Kids are very progressive. I think that if they really think about it and what is happening, then they would support their artists and like, wait, this is wrong. We kind of agree with you. And if I were a gay kid living in North Carolina and I see that someone cares enough to pull out, mm-hmm. then I think that it's making a statement for all those kids and those places. Like, I know that one of the people that signed the list actually has a kid who really needs this to be done. So I feel like that it matters to see that, because if I lived in North Carolina and I was a kid who was in that space, I would like to have someone send this message.
Right. And know that you have the support.
Yes.
Right.
Because it's a big deal to cancel a concert. It's yeah. money. It's yeah. So
yeah, I mean, I'm all on yeah. on the side of that. But I hear rumblings on both. So I was just curious yeah. as to your take on
yeah.
it.
Which I'm with
I think
you.
Is good. Okay. So since we're going to talk about writing, the first thing I wanted to mention to you is I'm sure you saw that Beverly Cleary's just turned 100.
Yes.
Did you see that?
Yes.
Is it yesterday that she turned 100?
I think it's yesterday. I just retweeted a quote of hers.
What were your favorites of her books?
Oh my God. You go first. What's your favorite?
Ralph S. Mouse and Dear Mr. Henshaw.
The mouse one was my favorite.
And then there was the mouse and the motorcycle.
Yeah.
But I have to tell you the funniest thing. Obviously now as an author, I love to read for pleasure.
Have you gone back and read those?
Yes, I have. I have read them to friends, kids.
Yeah.
But as a youngster, I did not like to read. And so whenever I had to do a book report, I can't tell you how many book reports I wrote on the mouse and the motorcycle.
I love it.
And that I recycled.
Oh my God,
over and over.
And I, of course, was like super nerd who loved to read and wanted to do the book report, whatever it was. Yes.
Yeah. I found the pleasures of reading later.
Because you're such a big reader now.
Now, yeah. yes. But for some reason, I think it's because when it was assigned to me.
Yeah.
I think I don't like authority.
I can see. No.
And when it was assigned, surprising.
So shocking.
And
Josh.
When it was assigned to me, it just felt like a chore as yeah. opposed to pleasure. Whereas now I, actually like it. So I'm sorry. So what are we calling your favorite for Beverly Cleary?
The motorcycle one.
As well.
Yeah,
okay.
Those two.
Okay, so you were born in Ohio but raised in Georgia,
yes.
right? Okay, so what was your, growing up, okay, what was yeah. your dream? Well, I'm going to be what when I grow up?
Oh, a writer. Like from the second I was like, the second I was born, I think I knew I wanted to be a writer. Apparently once I said I wanted to be a lawyer when I was about 4 and my parents clung to that hope and it never happened for them. But in first grade, I don't know if you had to do this, but every kid got to make a story and they would put it in a little wallpaper covered, like they'd publish it. Like, did you ever get to do that?
A story that looked like it was, I don't remember. I mean, yeah. I remember so many things that used to happen. Like, I mean, the things that you used to do in school,
like
the dioramas,
the
whatever.
Yeah, so it was one of those things.
Making things out of cereal boxes.
So, yeah, so
I mean, the dumbass things that your parents wind up having to do for you.
Yeah, but this one, like the school would actually bind your little book and like okay. every kid got a book. So I got okay. to write a story and it was like a unicorn and a princess and like I was in love. And it's like, this is what I want to do.
Sounds like the same book cover I'd have.
Yeah, and I'm still writing that book now. So I'm doing the Snow Queen. Finally, I got there. So I wrote that.
I feel like if I wrote Snow Queen, it would be a whole different story.
I think you would. I would love to see that version.
My version of Snow Queen and yours.
Yes, I'd like to see like a side-by-side comparison of those. I'd like to see the movie actually of yours. But yeah, so I wrote that and I was just smitten with writing, but it did not seem like a feasible path, or maybe I don't know who told me that like it was really hard to be a writer. So I decided I still wanted to write, but I'd be a journalist. So I made the decision and I like worked for my school paper. I was the editor of my junior high paper, my senior high paper. I went to Columbia and I thought I was going to go to get my master's in journalism. I was so sure. And then
it's so funny because I had a similar path in that way because I thought I was going to do journalism.
Yeah.
And I went to Syracuse because of the
Newhouse
school.
That's why I picked it.
And then I abandoned that.
Me too.
When I saw how jaded and dark most journalists are.
Oh, my story is not. I didn't even get there. Like senior year, my freshman year, I decided that maybe I didn't want to do hardcore journalism. Maybe I do broadcast journalism. And then I decided, oh, maybe I want to do magazines. And I ran the magazine. I was at our school and we went to fashion shows. It was so much fun. And then my senior year, I took two internships, one at Paper Magazine, very hip and cool. hip is not a cool word, though. I've got to find a better word.
And but we know what you mean.
You know what I mean. And Guiding Light, which was a soap opera.
Which we're going to get to.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so I took both internships, and I was taking a dramatic writing class, and I was like, wait, this is fun. I get to hang out with cute actors, and I get to, like, watch
Although
TV.
Guiding Light, I'm sorry, was the ugliest of the soaps.
I know, but still better than some. Yes, like, better than Paper Magazine.
But I used to look, I'm like, we had some good actors. I'm like, but this is the least attractive of soap operas.
Yeah. But at least there were some cute boys. Not yes. really. We, they could have done better.
Right.
But
there were
yeah,
some.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I immediately changed my mind and decided I wanted to work there. And I got a job right out of college and I worked my way up and started writing scripts. And
okay, you're getting way
is,
too ahead.
Okay. I'm going to slow down.
We're going to get in. Okay. We're going to get into some of this.
So I changed my mind.
Okay. So, but when did you actually know, like wanting to be a writer, but when did you actually know that you had a talent for it?
Oh, I was in fourth grade mm-hmm. and we got to do that wallpaper thing again with
right.
the books. Mm-hmm. And I wrote
you
this.
You just love being published,
I
don't
did.
You?
I really had the bug at nine. And so this time it was like write a nonfiction thing and each person had a topic. And my topic was like, what is the secret to success? And I wrote this thing and my teacher called my parents in and said that Danielle plagiarized this because it was too good. And I had not plagiarized it. My parents stood up for me. And then it's like, if I'm good enough for people to think I faked it, then I'm good.
So conversely, did you ever have any school teachers during your either, you know, elementary education or high school education who criticized your writing? Ever?
No, never.
Did you ever get a grade, you know, a lower grade?
Once I got a C on a spelling test and I cried and I got to retake it.
Show up at that teacher's house with a copy of like with this stack? And
no,
be
I
like,
still can't.
Bitch, please.
No,
okay?
I can't.
Look how many New York Times bestsellers, okay?
No, I can't spell still. So she was right about that. I have
okay,
a
but
I have
what
an
about
editor.
The person who thought you plagiarized? Do you want to bring this stack to her house?
Oh yeah, no. I thought it was I took it as a compliment though. I genuinely thought like, yay me. I'm good enough to be thought of as a fake.
But
so,
don't you love that whole thing when you get to like show
yeah,
somebody like
yeah. No, yeah. I have other examples of people right. I would like to come and do the bitch please moment with, but
who
but,
are those people?
Just anybody who did not love my writing like later in life. Like mm-hmm. I, you know, cause you audition for stuff and you don't get every single thing. I got a lot of things, but yeah.
All right. Well, hopefully they're watching and this is a big bitch, please to those people. Okay. So you and I met working on the now defunct soap opera Guiding
yes.
Light. How did that job and internship come about for you? Because you started as an intern and then assistant to the writers, and then you became an actual writer for the show. So how did that sort of happen?
The internship came from Columbia had a binder. They didn't even have, it wasn't even in the computer for entertainment jobs because they did not, everything was focused on business and law and stuff. So I found it in a binder. I thought about my grandmother who watched it. My mom watched it. I used to watch it. So
Well, we watched it. I mean, in our house, our cleaning lady, she watched the whole CBS lineup. So it was like from 12:30 to 1:30, she did the living room watching The Young and the Restless. And then from 12:30 to 1, it was The Bold and the Beautiful in my parents' bedroom. Then she moved to our bedrooms for As the World Turns. And she left right after Guiding Light.
So she had like the 3-hour schedule.
I mean, she was literally, I don't know what she really cleaned. She stood there literally holding a mop and watching. I said to my mom, she could be dead and we wouldn't know unless the mop fell.
I love it. Yeah, but my mom watched the lineup. My grandmother did. And so that was why I picked it. I was like, this will be fun. Not that I wanted to work there. And I just kind of felt like I liked the idea of writing scripts. I thought it was fun. And I worked my way up just like any, I did the internship thing. I did the production office thing, and at every turn, I always told people I wanted to write. Eventually, I got a head writer, Claire Labine, who created Ryan's Hope, mm-hmm. Who was like, I think you can write. She met me.
Not like we're dating ourselves or anything, Ryan's Hope.
Well, that was on a very long time ago, but she had
back
a very...
Back when Danielle and I used to watch our stories.
Yes. Hey, there's a few left. They can't necessarily figure this
Literally,
out.
Literally, they are hanging on by a thread.
They're
like a loose tooth.
Which makes me sad. I know. Like,
we're going to get there.
Yeah,
I'm getting there.
But so, yeah. So she let me sample. Like, I used to write the little, like, you know, if a show was too short, I would write a scene to fill in. And then, like, literally after I did that for a couple months, she's like, let's write an episode together. And we did. My first scene was Alan and Claire in a hot tub. It was like an old guy and a young woman in a hot tub. And that was my very first scene on TV. I invited all my friends over to watch my
your words.
Yes. And everyone else was like, they were not as excited as I was, but it was awesome.
What are the challenges of writing for daytime TV? Because that pace has to be intimidating.
I think it's the pace. That is the challenge. Like, and also,
because you're turning out something every day. I mean, literally, you're shooting an hour of TV a day.
Yeah. So you write a script a week. But you have an outline, so you have something to hold on to. And I say there's like two challenges. There's the speed and like making stuff that's not believable believable. Like like you could have a clone story or a ghost story or whatever.
And we did have all of this.
Yeah. And at the time,
we had a clone. We had a spirit travel from the Amish country. I don't know if you remember.
That was hard. The spirit from the Amish country was like hard for me. But
I mean, honestly.
Yeah. Now I think I would kill to write a clone story. I think it fits into my YA world perfectly. But at the time I balked at that stuff and I was like, I just want to write scenes where people are like talking about their feelings and like their romantic stuff and like... But now I'm like, well, this is a fantasy is what I do. So it was a good training ground.
Yeah. And who knew?
Yeah. I had no idea.
So as we were saying, unfortunately, daytime drama is sort of going the way of the dinosaur. So when Guiding Light was canceled, what did you do immediately next? Because did you know you wanted to write books or were you looking for other TV jobs right away?
I was just looking for any job. And I think the thing about soaps is like, it's such a niche thing and it's not necessarily respected outside of the genre except for the speed. Mm-hmm. So like it was.
And that's a shame because people do work so hard. If people knew what it took to create an hour of TV a day.
Yeah. And I think it just depended on who you talked to, like what they felt about the genre. But in terms of the actual scripts I produced and some of them, I think I love my dialogue and I was very proud of it. But you can't use that as a writing sample because no one cares,
right?
So it's like starting from scratch. I might have written 100 scripts and none of them mattered. So it was like I needed to write a spec script. I needed to start over. Do I go to LA? What do I do? And I literally talked to anybody in the world who would have me. And I went on an interview for MTV Made. It was like that show where kids get made over. Mm-hmm. And this guy who was a lovely producer was like, I don't think you're right for this, but I think I want to do a pilot, like a soap opera. I want to do a teenage soap opera. And he let me write something. So I got to write this this Ivy League soap opera thing, and Al Roker was a producer on it. It was like so random and fun. And it didn't get made, but it did get, they paid me for it, and it went pretty far. So it gave me a taste of like, oh, wait, now I have a sample that is not a soap sample. And it kind of opened other doors for me.
So it gave you a credibility in that space.
Yeah. And through that, I met actually the editor for Dorothy. I was at the Writers Guild, like for a party or for something. And I ran into this girl who was at the Punch Bowl, and I talked to anybody about what I'm doing.
Talking about your first best-selling novel, Dorothy Must Die, which is now in paperback.
Yeah, and we hit it off, and she said that they were looking for stuff, and Dorothy kind of came out of that. So I really kind of lucked out. It was, I think the other work counts, but it was about talking to people about what you want, and that's how I got here.
It's funny, but to the soaps for one second, I actually read somewhere that there's a group that advocates, it's called like SOS, Save
what
Our
is
Soaps.
That? Oh.
I mean, I just have to laugh. I mean, I appreciate the jobs that daytime provides for people, but it just makes me laugh when there's so much going on in the world.
Yes, yes.
And people are organizing and making an effort to save soap operas.
And I honestly think that...
I mean, forget the water in Flint.
Who needs that? You need to
keep General Hospital going.
That is, General Hospital is water to some people.
I mean...
You know, but I do think there's a place for soaps, and I do think that serialized storytelling, like that's what Grey's Anatomy is doing, what Scandal's doing, what all these primetime shows are doing. They've borrowed from the soaps. Like,
right. Yeah. Well, I mean, look, here's the thing. I believe that the OJ trial marked the end of daytime TV for the most part because people shifted their attention, first of all. And then it was sort of an economic turning point as well. Just things were different economically in the world, not necessarily related to OJ, but in general. And people weren't home anymore to watch.
Yeah, I think it's both women going to the workplace and then to like the realization from the producer end that, oh, wait, we can make something that costs nothing and not have to pay all the unions, and we could do the Kardashians and we can actually like save money.
Right. Well, and so now how do you feel about that, the fact that such a large percentage of what's on TV now is unscripted or quote unscripted? I mean, we both know that that's loose.
Well, I think there's a lot of on TV, but then there's been kind of an answer to that. There's so much drama too. Like there's so many other options like drama.
But a lot of that's not on network.
Right. But if you don't have cable, then you're losing out. If you do have these other options, there's a lot of drama still out there. So it's just, if you economically cannot afford all the cable stuff, then that sucks. Yeah.
Because a lot of what's on, I mean, and I'm not saying there aren't some great shows on network. I mean, there are, but it's just become, TV has become this whole binge watching mentality and all that, it's just become a different landscape.
It has, but as a writer, there's a lot more opportunity. Again, I feel like there was a moment where I thought everything was going to go to reality, but I think the advent of like Netflix and Amazon has really, there's like, it's open doors. There's a lot of drama.
So I want to talk to you a little more. You touched a little bit about how the Dorothy series came about. So the first book in the series, which was a wildly successful bestseller, which is Dorothy Must Die, which is the first in the series. So how exactly did that come about? So you're at a party and you're networking and you tell somebody
I ended up having a meeting with the editor and it just kind of came from there. It was like one of those like things that don't happen, but like happened for me.
Like you were like, that was your Lana Turner at Schwab's moment.
Yeah, it really was.
So clearly the publisher believed in it enough because you were signed for two sequels right away, The Wicked Will Rise and Yellow Brick War.
Yeah, and now we're going to four, so it's going to be...
Oh, it is going to be four now?
Yeah, so when you finish this last one, you're going to notice there's a cliffhanger, so it has to go. There's one more.
Oh, I haven't finished this one. Okay, so did their confidence scare you? Like, I would imagine that that's a lot of pressure, you finish the one, and then they're already wanting your...
It's the way the YA world works. There's a lot of series, and you're actually, it's kind of, as a writer, you're relieved to have the work lined up. It's like, I knew for the first time in a long time that I had 2 years of work. Like, even in soaps, every 6 months, I can can you. Instead, I knew that I had 3 years of work, like, solidly there. And that is actually kind of a relief and a comfort. The books could not do well, and that would suck, but I would have that time to figure out my next move. So, in a way, it was like kind of like a best case scenario.
But was there a pressure then once Dorothy Must Die was such a success? Was there a did you feel a pressure like, I need to deliver on The Wicked Will Rise?
Yeah, like, I want the fans to be happy. I want it to be as good. And you have a little bit less time because of touring and scheduling and stuff. So yeah, there's definitely a pressure, but I did feel like a comfort level at the same time. And like, you have the joy of, since the book did do well, it's like, oh my God, like, kids actually like this. So you have this kind of validation going into the next one. It's a little of both.
And is there also a pressure to sort of duplicate your success? Like, did you put that pressure on yourself? Like, okay, is Wicked Will Rise going to hit the same point on the New York Times bestseller list?
I freaked out like right before it came out. It's like, is it going to do well? Did I push it enough? Is there anything I can do? And you just, you know, it's like, are kids still interested in it? Like, kids can age out of a series. Kids can get tired of it. They might want, Dorothy might not be their thing this year. So there's always that. So yeah. And like, even this, the next one came out last month and I was just, you feel it all over again. You feel the terror of like, does anybody like me? Is anyone going to come to my party? You know?
Right. Right. So how did it feel when Yellow Brick War debuted on the bestseller list?
Oh, it's really exciting because it's the series list, which is the combined middle grade and YA. So it's like it's the Harry Potter list. So it was a big deal for me.
And so and your parents who were hoping that you might go into law, do they still hope that you'll wind up in a courtroom, or are they good with this now?
You know, I think if I have a bad ear down the road, they could still say, like, law school's there for you, honey. But they're very proud. And the New York Times thing, I think, kind of meant more to them than like getting nominated for Emmys and stuff. They're book people.
Because you have been nominated for Emmys.
Yeah, I don't have one.
But no, but you've been nominated. Yeah. And didn't you win a Writers Guild Award?
I do have a Writers Guild Award, yeah, which I was thrilled for. But for my parents, I think the New York Times thing, like there's some sort of like, my parents watch like book TV and they're like, have you seen the latest book TV where this author's talking about this? And they call me. So they are really excited about books. So this really makes them happy too.
And then what will happen when you wind up producing a film based on something that you write and you wind up having to get an Oscar, what will their reaction be?
You know, I think if I have the Oscar, maybe I don't have to go back to law school, but you never know.
And then you'll have to we have to figure out a way for you to be an EGOT, because we'll have to figure out how to get you your Emmy, your Oscar, we can get you a Golden Globe, but the Tony, you might have to write a book of a musical.
I think that's the only way, because I could not perform, so that would be,
you could write the book, or you're going to need to learn to write music.
I would have to write the book then. I'm not musical at all. Are you musical?
And does a Golden Globe, is the G a Golden Globe or is it a Grammy?
Grammy.
Okay, well, if it's a Grammy, then we could also get you, you could do this spoken word.
I could do the audio. I have a voice for it. I could do it. Okay.
All right, so that's my plan for you.
Thank you. This is good. But we have to start with the Oscar, obviously.
Wait, what did you ask me?
I can't even remember what I asked you.
I don't know. Wasn't a good question. Mm-mm. Clearly, I'm on the right side.
It would have stuck. Yeah, it would have. I did not end up being a journalist. So
the series, which is a retelling basically of The Wizard of Oz, has really struck a chord with young readers. So you've had interim novellas published to keep rabid fans happy in between actual full length novels. Have you had any particularly fun fan experiences?
My very, very first tour, there was a girl dressed like Dorothy, and I was like sold. It's like, that's amazing. I didn't know the kids dressed up. I mean, it's an easy costume to get, but it was just a regular library visit, and there she was, and that was so amazing. And once I did a Skype visit with a class, and the entire class was dressed as my characters. So that was good.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And what about gifts? Like, do people bring you things at book signings?
I get a lot of fan art. Like, people draw stuff. It's amazing. And there's so many talented little kid artists. I love it.
So do you, and the books sort of speak to a pretty wide, I mean, they're considered young adult.
Yes.
But they kind of speak to, I mean, like, I could see a more advanced younger person reading them, and I could also see it appealing to adults. It's not really straddles that line.
I think because Oz is so universal, like, I think we all grew up reading it, so there's, like, it already has this, like, home base for everybody. And I think it really, there's a lot of eighth graders that love my book, and then there's a lot of moms that come to my line, and there's, like, a lot of just, like, people who love Oz. So it's kind of like type O blood, like it's kind of everybody likes it, which is great.
That's a good analogy.
Thank you.
Note to self. So your Oz character is a Kansas teenager named Amy Gum.
Yes.
So how much of Danielle would you say did you inject into this person?
Well, I did not grow up in a trailer park, but you know, I get that question a lot. I do think that I have a lot of sarcasm. You know me.
Yes.
And I don't always say it out loud. She says it out loud. So there's like, I think it's like the little internal Danielle voice. She's more of a blurter than I am. But I do think that I relate to her. I relate to her struggle, and that I'm socially pretty, I'm good at being social. She's not as good as that. But I think the struggle of being a writer, I kind of relate to the struggle of being a teenager. Like, there's something about you have to keep striving and the journey thing. I totally feel that.
Did you make a conscious choice to give her certain attributes to make her better at certain things that you're not good at, and vice versa? Like, did you, was that a thing, or did it just sort of come out that way?
No, I think it's kind of fun writing someone who's tougher than you, like, in that way. Like, I like that she's a girl that could actually throw a punch if she had to. Like, there's like, that is not an experience that I've had, but it's fun to play with.
Well, not with your nails.
No, it would just not happen. No. So, like, she can do those things that I can do, and I kind of think that there's something so cool about that.
Now, if you could pick somebody to play her, When you write, do you have somebody in mind?
No.
Or
no.
You've totally, okay.
Yeah, I think she's somebody that I've not seen before. Like, she doesn't relate to a friend of mine. She's a little bit of me and something else. I can say that when I was writing Dorothy, though, I saw Lindsay Lohan. So it's kind of like funny. The train wreck kind of character, like, at least externally. But that's like maybe the only person in the universe. Everything else was just in my head.
That might be a long shot, the Lindsay Lohan. Protection might have a hard time insuring her.
I feel like yes, but I think
and plus
that,
now we said she's getting married anyway.
Yeah,
she's busy with her 22-year-old
she's planning her
boyfriend,
wedding.
Igor.
But maybe he grounds her. Maybe he'll make her more solid and she could be in my movie. Mm-hmm. No, you don't think so?
I just think it's a liability, but you know, there you go.
Yeah.
You do what you need to.
Yeah.
Don't mind me.
We'll see. But her early work was, I love Mean Girls forever.
Right. Well, and Freaky Friday. She was great in the remake of Freaky Friday. And she was great in Parent Trap.
It's like someone that has so much potential. I loved her.
Well, and it is a shame that she sort of went down the stony end to some degree because she really is a good little actress.
Yeah, and I thought that she was going to be our, like,
don't you like how I said good little actress, like a little diminutive, a little good little actress.
But she really, I thought she had real talent and, like, would be, like, I thought she'd be a star that, like, lasted. I was so surprised by her spiral. And I'm glad that she's at least in a stable place, even if she's not acting yet. But maybe she'll have a second. I mean, like, look at Robert Downey Jr. Like,
right.
He's brilliant, and he had a spiral, and he came back, and he's, like, bigger than ever.
Right. And I was about to say, yeah, but he didn't try to do albums, but he did.
He did. So it's all the same. He's just like, it's the same story.
Everybody thinks that he or she can sing.
Yeah, except for me. I know I cannot.
Same here.
And I will not be singing publicly.
Although sometimes what I hear nowadays that gets released, I feel like if I had the right producers
and
I was auto-tuned, like I think I might be passable.
And with the right dance number, Josh. Right. Yeah.
The right sequence and
the right,
I could do it.
Yeah.
So you don't have to say which.
Okay.
But do you have a favorite book in your series? I assume they're all like children, like loved differently, but equally.
No, I love the first one.
You do?
I do.
I love how I wasn't trying to nail you to something.
Whatever. First one. I love
Why
the other.
Why is that?
Because it's when you build the world and it's like your first, you know, first kiss, first you know what? Like, it's just, it's that first blush of something. I loved being able to create this world, and that's where it came together for me. So I love still being in the world, but, like, I think there's something about the first.
Can you explain the term, which is so often used now with particularly fantasy fiction, is the term world building for people who are writing, and they call it world building.
It's everything from like what the place looks like to what the currency is to what the belief system is to like what the themes are. Like it's kind of like starting from scratch. Well, I am starting from Oz, but like for me, it was like circumventing everything and okay, this is what the world's going to look like. And this is what the problems are in that world. So in my world, Dorothy has made a happiness decree that says everyone has to be happy, but really it's only her that has to be happy. And she's draining the magic out of the world. And the world looks to the Oz that you know is not Technicolor anymore because she's drained it out of it. Like it's that stuff. It's the details of the world.
So when you create that, when you create this backstory and you know sort of who your characters are and what the world is, do you necessarily include all of those details in the book, or is some of it just really there for you so that it's a consistent world?
Yeah, you have to answer the questions for yourself, but like every detail is not going to come up in the first book. It might not come up until the last book. It might never actually come out, but I like that you know, I know that the uniforms look like XYZ or...
Even though that may not actually appear in the story.
Yeah, because it just makes it more real for you and it makes it like... Then you can tell your story because you're really there.
So your next book, which comes out in September, is a retelling of The Snow Queen called Stealing Snow.
Yes.
How did you decide to tackle that story next?
I wanted to do another retelling because I had such luck with the first one. And I actually went out with a Peter Pan story first and then ended up doing something different. And I might have dodged a bullet because Peter Pan didn't have the best year in other avenues. But I still love that Peter Pan one.
You're referring to Pan with Hugh Jackman.
Yes. I wanted him to be
love.
Good.
I mean, and I love Peter Pan. Yeah. I mean, I wanted to be Peter Pan. I used to run around the house singing and pretending like I was Peter
Pan.
You would
be so cute as Peter Pan.
Not that I was gay or anything.
No, just really cute.
I couldn't believe that it just, that movie had all the trappings of success, but then just.
Yeah. So I kind of like I switched gears and tried Snow Queen and I love it. It's so much fun.
So how do you feel like, because Frozen, which is sort of also part of that genre and that.
I'm so going to have a panic attack the day before this book comes out because like does anyone want Grown Up Frozen? I'm hoping that it works in that way. I think that.
Yeah, but don't you think people who were, I mean, Frozen is what, 2 years ago now?
I think it might be like 4 maybe.
I can't even do the math anymore.
But I think the original story, the original fairy tale is so different than what Frozen is. Then
right.
I got to like delve into that and I like a good dark story and that's what I'm doing. So it's very different, but it's still, if you like princessy stuff, but dark, it's,
well, I've read most of it. Yes. So I'm a fan already. So there you go. Not to tease everyone to say I've read it and you haven't, but
yeah, but we can say what, like it starts out in a mental hospital and there's a girl who does not realize she's the Snow Queen and a hot orderly tells her to cross a tree and run away. And
you know how much I love a hot orderly.
I do
in your
too,
books though,
clearly.
They end up differently than they do in my stories.
I know. I like your stories though.
You know, plumbers, pizza delivery man. It all turns out differently in my mind than it does in yours.
Yeah, completely. I didn't say that. Well, in my mind, it could be different than on the page. But, but in this case, so it's just the hot orderly tells her this. She crosses this tree and she ends up in another land and people kneel for her. Like that's the thing. So it's really, and she finds out that her father, the Snow King, wants to have her killed. So it's dark and fun.
There you go. So do you have any interest in trying your hand in a novel for adults? And when I say that, I don't mean erotic. I mean just a more, that's geared towards
I would love to do that. I don't know what it is because I think I'm really in the YA space right now in my head. But I spent a long time writing for grownups and I love doing that too. I'd love to tackle something grown up.
With kids growing up so fast these days, which was sort of what we were talking about during the Hot Topics part, and they know so much so soon now. How different is YA material from adult material? Like, where's the line? What is it that separates?
What separates it is just having the story be told from the point of view of a young adult. Like, you cannot have it be about anyone. It can't be about a young adult and their mom. It can't be Gilmore Girls. It has to be focused on the kid, and the kid has to be 18 or younger. And that's really the only dividing line. Like,
so it's not about the writing style per se. It's not about the content.
No,
it's really about perspective.
That's it. Like, that's how we classify it. And I mean, something like Goldfinch is technically a young adult book because it's about a young teenage girl. So. But it's,
and you know how much young adults want to read 900-page books.
They do. They love it. There's a few that are in like the 500 or 600 page and people love them. We just break the books up into 3 books and then you don't realize you're reading 900
series,
pages.
Right?
Yeah. So, I mean, sometimes people think it's like there's just a big difference in the quality, but I don't think so. I think there's a range.
So since you work in the young adult space, do you feel like you have more of a responsibility in your own personal life? Do you have a responsibility like to behave a certain way and be a certain kind of person because you have all of these fans who are so young?
I would not post anything about my life that I feel...
not that you do anything wrong. I mean, you're like such a good, good person, but... I'm just saying, do you feel a responsibility to just sort of?
I do feel a responsibility.
Because, for example, with my brand, I say whatever I want. Like, I don't feel any responsibility to anyone except to be who I am, to be completely genuine. And if this person's a bitch, I'll say they're a bitch. You probably have to be a little more guarded
Yeah, I don't put that out there. But I honestly, before I started writing,
also because you're nicer than I am, yeah, which might be a reason.
I am,
and that's not hard to be.
But I think that
Charles Manson's made the same claim.
I think that you're super nice and just very honest and funny. But yeah, like I don't put anything out. But I don't even before I started writing YA, I didn't put anything out there on that way. So I'm actually still kind of staying true to that.
But also you are now much more public than you were at that
yes,
time.
Yes, which is such a weird thing because as a writer, you think of your, like I honestly, I had a good number of years where I was writing professionally and no one cared so on that way.
Right.
So it is interesting, like the YA community has its own little, like it's like we go on tours and there's like hundreds of kids that come and see us and it's like there's something kind of amazing about it and you never think about that when you start writing, or at least mm-hmm. I never did. So
that there is a responsibility yeah. to those people.
Yeah.
What does it feel like when you walk into Barnes & Noble and at the bottom of the escalator is a huge display with Danielle Page books?
That is so, it's just so cool.
Because I feel that way for you when yeah. I walk into Barnes & Noble.
It literally never gets old. It's like, it is just, it's a surprise every time. I don't want to sound like Pollyanna, but you just, you do not get tired of that. It's like,
it's
really.
So interesting, right?
Yeah. And like,
when I see your, you know, I'll go in and whenever a new novella comes out, they'll have all of your books in one area. There'll be a table full of Danielle Page books.
Yeah. It's just that part. I love it. I love it. And I think when you write, you want people to read you and you want your words to be out in the world, and to get to have that and have this response has just been like this big gift that I didn't think I was going to get. I'm really happy.
So tell me about Y'all West, which is like this burgeoning young adult convention. Burgeoning might be a little conservative. I think at this point it's broken out a little bit more.
I don't know the numbers, but it's really big now compared, like this is its second year. It comes out of Y'all Fest, which is was the one in South Carolina. And it's getting bigger every year. It's like, so they ship in like kids from others, from schools to come. And it's a real teen book festival. Like you have like hundreds of kids in the audience. Like, and it's 2 days of panels and like the biggest names in YA, like Veronica Roth, who did Divergent, Victoria Aveyard, who is Red Queen, just all these great, last year, James Dashner, like there's like a bunch of people that are like, it's the top of YA. And if you love these books, then you want to be there.
So sort of like the place for fans to connect with the authors and for you to connect with your fans.
Yeah. And they have there's so many signings and fun panels. The panels are actually chosen by kids, which is great.
Yeah. They didn't ask me for Porn Again.
It's so weird. I don't know. I don't know. Like this year there's going to be a Hamilton sing along. There may or may not be some Harry Potter cosplay. It's just like, it's
cosplay.
Yes.
I mean, honestly,
yes.
Not to judge because
cosplay. So, but Harry Potter, it's very sweet.
In my world, cosplay,
it's very
in
different.
The sex writing yeah. world, cosplay is a whole different thing.
Yeah, no, in our world, it's just
there's
exactly.
Lots of paddling
it might as well just be yeah. Halloween, like, but not even like grown up Halloween. It's like kid Halloween. So it's just really sweet and fun. There's like a smackdown. There's a little there's a performance night where all the authors get to perform and like they do Hollywood squares and like just fun, just cute stuff.
It sounds great.
And there's a band, like there's a band of YA authors, Libba Bray, and is like the lead singer. She wrote a bunch of amazing books like The Diviners, and she's a singer for it. It's just really fun. And they're called Tiger Beat.
As it should be.
Yeah.
So you'll be at Y'all West
this
year.
Yes, I'll be doing a bunch of panels on Saturday and the performancing at night. It's going to be really fun. So if anyone's
people can
in town,
come and they can, people can buy tickets for that? Is that how it works? You buy sort of a pass to the festival?
I think it's like pretty, it's free for, some of the things are free and then there are a few ticketed things. So like, I think that like the panels actually, I think are all free, but they're like, you might have to get the tickets too for some things just because it fills up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. So tell me about your fellow young adult writers, because it seems like a very specific genre world.
It is. It's like this, I think because...
And you all seem to know each other.
We do. And it's like this weird, also a big surprise, because coming from soaps, which I absolutely loved, it was a world that was kind of shrinking. So it's like who's going to be left on the ship, even though it's a wonderful ship. And like, I've gotten so much support now from my soap friends. Like they've really come out and mm-hmm. helped me. But the YA world is like growing. Like it's just one of those. So there's not that kind of crazy competition as in the other, like as in TV. Like I feel like you're not competing with anyone. It's like everyone is trying to push everyone else up. There's like room for everyone on the ship, you know?
That almost sounds very fairy tale-ish.
It does.
You mean to tell me that there's no competitive, like there's no death match going on between anybody? Nobody's secretly hoping for the failure of
I'm sure that happens. It hasn't been my experience so far, though. Like, I'm sure that
I want a smackdown. Like, yeah. I want to see red.
Yeah, I bet. I kind of want to see the underside of it, but I haven't. I don't want it to be.
You're better off staying where you are.
Personally, yeah. I like my fairy tale land. No, but I've made a lot of good friends, and I do. And people like your book comes out, everyone tweets for each other. Everyone,
right.
You know, we all go to the same conferences. We go to Comic-Con, we do all these things together. And it's nicer to be nice and enjoy the company than like, it's a lot of time with a lot of people. Like you don't, I think it'd be harder if you're.
No, I agree. And I like nice people because they're easier to make fun of.
Yeah. And I think that just the culture you're dealing with, like how hard can it be to be like, everyone's writing for kids. It's not like, it's not really a bitch slappy kind of place, right. You know?
Well, I may join the ranks and I'll turn it into.
Yeah,
that.
Bring some drama. We need some drama.
Just kidding. Okay, so I'm going to shift now. Okay. At the end of each show, I always talk about a dating or sex question that comes into my Gay Times column in London or from some of the Huffington Post pieces I write. So today we have a dating question.
Okay, cool. I need to start dating again. So if you know anybody,
we need somebody really in New York for you.
Oh, yeah.
Because for the most part, you're in New York.
I mean, I'm out here for a month, but yeah.
So everybody, you see how lovely and pretty and smart and talented Danielle is?
I love you, Josh.
If somebody is interested, you see her, you know where to tweet me at Josh Sabara. I will gladly go through applications. I will vet you. And then I will determine whether or not you make it in front of Danielle.
Oh, you were so cute.
What's going on with my hair, by the way? Okay, so I received a direct message on Twitter from somebody named Lydia, a 20-year-old woman in Seattle.
Okay.
So she's been active on various dating sites, and she finds that the back-and-forth messaging always gets her hopes up. So by the time she actually meets the men on the other side of the phone, they're inevitably disappointing to her.
Yes.
So she wants to know if we can suggest any ways that she can better manage her expectations so that there's not a huge letdown so often.
I think try to meet faster.
That's what I was going to say. I agree with you. I don't think it's about managing her expectations.
Yeah.
I think it's about changing the behavior pattern of the dating experience.
Yeah, because I think if you meet faster, then you just say next. If it's not working, if you don't have the chemistry, like don't have the buildup and then discover in real life that you don't like the person.
So what to you would be the right amount of time? Like, so you meet, how much time do you need to know that there's enough of a common interest? Is the profile enough? Or
I think I need a little bit more than the profile, but I would like maybe you just text a couple of times and like if this guy seems like he's, if you feel like it's safe, then go. Like I feel
always meet in a public place.
The sooner the better because why waste your time?
You can meet, I mean, I get that sometimes during the week it's hard.
Yeah.
Because people are working or they're in traditional jobs, but I say if you can meet within 2 to 3 days of being in touch and not to encourage the constant texting.
Don't invest.
And also don't always, you know, a lot of times people will say, you know, oh, instead of working through this app, let me give you my number and we can text back and forth.
No.
And I always think that, first of all, by giving somebody your number, you're really inviting them into a really personal place.
Yeah, I don't want to.
And
do that.
It's inviting them to be in touch with you more regularly. So if you keep them confined to the app.
Yes.
And then try to meet them within 2 to 3 days.
I think that sounds like a good plan.
I think is the best way. So for Lydia, our advice to you is not to change your expectations.
Right.
But set yourself up better so you can meet your expectations.
Right.
And then when something's not working, don't drag it out. It's, you know, you meet, it doesn't work, you move on.
Yes. I think that's good advice.
Okay. So thank you, Danielle Page, for joining us today. You can find Danielle on Facebook at Danielle Page, PAIGEYA, as well as on Twitter and Instagram at Danielle M. Page.
There's a 15-year-old that took my name without the, yeah.
Bitch.
Yeah, that's, you know.
I will hunt her down.
She's self-published. No, before
I'm sure
me.
She's great.
She's lovely.
I'm sure she's lovely.
Yeah,
I kid you.
I wish I could buy my name off of her.
I kid you, Danielle Page, the other Danielle Page, who to me will forever be the other Danielle
Page. Yeah, she's probably she'd be 17 now, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm doing the math.
Let her come back to me with three New York Times bestsellers and she and I will talk.
Yes.
Until then, Danielle
you.
M. Page.
Yes.
Is where you'll find this wonderful writer on Instagram and Twitter. And her best-selling young adult novels, which are Dorothy Must Die and The Wicked Will Rise, and the new book, which I should show you, is called Yellow Brick War. I can never tell where I'm looking. Yellow Brick War is just out now, hot off the presses.
Yes.
And Stealing Snow comes out in September. So all of her books are available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever books are sold. Also, I just want to remind everybody that I am going to be at RuPaul's Drag Con.
How cool are you? I'm
so excited about it.
Yeah, I want to go to the Drag Con.
You're welcome to come.
I'm going to Vegas for Romantic Times Festival.
Yeah, but it's not till May. You'll just come back.
Oh.
It's worth flying in for. You can't get me to sign something for you at any other time.
No.
You'll have to fly
never,
to LA.
Yeah.
So I'll be signing copies of Porn Again, a memoir, May 7th and 8th. And also my pal Jace Peoples, who is the author of an LGBT-friendly children's book called Square, Zare, Pair, which is adorable.
I want to see that.
By the way, I will. I'll get you a copy. It's adorable. He's going to be signing books with me there.
That's so cool.
So there's something for the kids and something for the adults.
You're the grown-ups.
So you can get tickets to that at www.rupaulsdragcon.com.
So cool.
And thank you to everybody for joining us. And keep an eye out for some new episodes coming soon. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, Josh.
Thanks, Danielle.
Thanks for listening. The No Holds Barred conversation continues 24/7 on Facebook at Josh Sabara Author and Twitter and Instagram at Josh Sabara. And then buckle your seatbelts for some titillating real talk. Porn Again, a memoir by Josh Sabara, is available now as a trade paperback, ebook, and audiobook.